I'm speaking on the phone with double bassist and composer Edgar Meyer, who returns home to Oak Ridge on Monday, February 17th, to perform with his son George at First United Methodist Church of Oak Ridge. This concert is a special fundraiser for the Oak Ridge Civic Music Association. Thank you so much for taking time to talk with me today, Edgar.
My pleasure, Melanie.
Now, as I just mentioned, and as many of our listeners probably know, you grew up in Oak Ridge, which is such a wonderfully unique community. How would you say that growing up there shaped you as a person and shaped you as a musician?
Well, I mean, growing up in a community of scientists is fairly unique. I like the values, education and the arts are pretty far up there. And it was not a class divided place, as I discovered most of the world is later on.
It's hard not to notice the many scientists who live there and from all over the world, which I think has to be one of the most unique things. Did that influence your musical preferences or how you view music at all?
Maybe indirectly. I mean, one of my closest friends growing up was Ram Upaluri, and his father was from India, and his mother, who still lives in Oak Ridge, Shigeko, is from Japan. So I still think more than anything, it's just very simply the way that scientists operate. That's probably really got in there pretty deep with me.
Were there any people in particular in Oak Ridge who helped to shape you as a musician, like in teachers?
I would just say my father.
Mm-hmm.
There were many great teachers. You know, I had certainly a big fascination with mathematics. So Benita Albert was certainly encouraging of that. She might have even wanted me to go into math, but that wasn't going to happen. But I certainly loved it. But no, my father was a person who I very much, you know, from age two was wanting to be like him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the real direct and large influence.
You've recorded a number of what I like to call fusion albums, bluegrass fused with classical, jazz fused with classical, blurring the lines of labels that we put on music. Was that a conscious choice, or were you just making the music that you wanted to make?
Much more the latter. I mean, it's, you know, everything's conscious too. You know what you're doing, but I don't think I feel a lot of those divisions exactly the way other people do, and probably not with the rigidity. And in some cases, the divisions are necessary and real, and in some cases, they're actually just completely artificial. I mean, one has to use their judgment to try to figure out a way through that. But mm-hmm. some of the divisions over time are just created because of marketing needs.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the divisions between the music are more about who plays it and listens to it, but the actual music itself isn't that different. So there's just a lot of factors, and you know, I like to figure those things out for myself and not depend on any assumptions as to how the pieces are supposed to fit together.
Mm-hmm. In addition to being a world-renowned bassist, you are a composer. When and why did you begin composing?
Well, I probably started when we got a piano in the house, I think it was in elementary school. And I did it because both that I felt like I had something to say and also, very simply, curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of things that interest me, a lot of things I don't understand. And if there's a problem I want to work on to try to understand it better, there's nothing more effective than writing a piece that involves that question.
Mm-hmm. Did you compose music for double bass simply because there just wasn't a lot of music for solo double bass?
Yes and no. It certainly was something that I ran straight into when I was 25. I was at the Santa Fe Chamber Music Festival, and if I was going to want to get to play with these two people I wanted to play with, Daniel Phillips and Carter Bray, anything that was with a real vigorous dialogue, I was going to have to write it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that drove it more often than actual solo bass pieces, I think, was the desire to get to have a real dialogue with people that interested me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's not much on the table for bass in terms of the great composers. And so you're just working from a very different template, blank canvas, if you will, in some departments. But that suits my temperament. You know, it gives me a chance to kind of be myself and explore the world.
Something that I think about a lot as a radio host is, how do we keep classical music relevant, fresh, and interesting? How do we keep people listening to it? How do we get people to listen to it? Do you have any thoughts on that? How do we continue to keep classical music alive?
I think the most important thing is that you, first of all, have to have young people involved. The problem is endemic to classical music. Its weakness is the separation of writing and playing that happens slowly over more than 100 years. And so it's really crippled creatively, and there's nothing to do about it at this point. So I think what you do have is you have a treasure trove of 18th and 19th and even 20th century music that is as beautiful as anything, you know, created by humans. And so you value that. And then one thing that is going perfectly well is that people play just fine. A lot of young people play incredibly well. So in that sense, the music is in good hands. Mm-hmm. And I think the heart of the repertoire will always be of great value. And I think it will always be relevant because of its quality.
So it sounds like you're saying to keep it alive, we have to keep creating.
I guess I'm advocating, although I don't really mean to, but advocating for a lot more fusion between the writing and the playing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's trying to happen at this point. You know, there are a lot more young folks that are kind of writing and playing, and more of the composers can play a little bit and more of the players can write a little bit. That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't really undo the size of gap that got going in that.
Mm-hmm. You are performing in Oak Ridge with your son, George, who is...
Yes.
Quite a phenomenal violinist. I actually heard the two of you play together at the Telluride Bluegrass Festival 2 years ago. Yeah, I really enjoyed that set. But tell us more about George. When did he start playing the violin? Where has he studied? What kind of music does he like to play?
Well, you know, he's interested in a lot of the same music that I'm interested in. If you were going to summarize it, you know, you would probably start with the word instrumental music. He started playing violin at the age of five. And became a little bit fixated with mandolin around age 12, 13, and then kind of went back to violin after that. He did his undergrad as an English major at Harvard, and then he got a master's in violin at Juilliard. He loves to write music and to play, and he also is playing a good bit of viola along with the violin.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to be a good balance for him. I just went to hear a premiere of a piece he wrote for a young violinist named Katie Hewn, who played a recital in Philadelphia that was a debut of sorts. She had commissioned a 7-minute solo violin piece. And Chamber Music Northwest at Portland, Oregon, in addition to commissioning George and I together last summer for a 20-minute duo for us to play together and write together, they've commissioned George on his own for next summer to write a violin and viola duo.
Mm-hmm.
That he'll play viola on. And actually, Katie, that same violinist, will play violin on. George has a definite involvement in classical music, and he has a pretty strong foot inside of the bluegrass community. He certainly has grown up around a lot of the folks, both in my generation and his, and has been immersed in it at different points.
Mm-hmm.
So that and interest in composition would probably be a very quick summary. So very similar to my basic set of directions.
When was the first time that the two of you performed together?
I don't know. I mean, we've done it his whole life.
Yeah.
And just been kind of gradually leaking it a little more public.
Do you get to perform together very often?
We've got a kind of a moderate amount, which I think is about right for now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll do this little tour. We did some stuff in the summer. Then we've got a little bit of stuff coming up in the summer again. But then a year from now, we'll actually do a substantial tour with Mike Marshall and Sam Bush as a quartet.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah, it should be nice. And we'll be able to play some of the music that Mike and Sam and I recorded with Joshua Bell. And George can take those parts over. And then we'll do some other music also.
So you will be performing some of George's music in Oak Ridge. Tell me a little more about the music that you'll be presenting at that concert.
The shiny new thing will be the piece we premiered this summer in Portland, Oregon. And it's just a 20-minute duo for the two of us. There are at least three or four other pieces. You know, we're going to be probably 80%, you know, original music, and that 20 minutes is our only co-write. And, you know, there'll be a little bit of other traditional music kind of stuff.
Any pieces that you have composed on the concert?
Yes, it'll be half and half. Like I said, the piece that we wrote together, but then there'll also be plenty of pieces that each of us wrote.
This concert is a fundraiser for the nonprofit organization, the Oak Ridge Civic Music Association, which is the umbrella organization for the Oak Ridge Symphony, who is celebrating its 75th anniversary this year. The oldest.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's so exciting. The oldest continually performing orchestra in Tennessee.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of people don't. I didn't know that. Why is it important to have regional orchestras and arts organizations such as this one? And why would you say is it important for people to support them, to go out and hear these concerts that are presented right in their communities?
Once again, just very simply because the Beethoven and Mozart, that is some of the most beautiful music that has ever been created. And if one did not have an orchestra, then the chances of a young person becoming more familiar with it and more involved in it decrease quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and also, I mean, as you would know, my father's string program that he started, you know, has only continued extremely well after he was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the kind of thing that lines up very beautifully with the community of scientists, to have that kind of a, as part of an educational, even foundational opportunity for kids. All of that is much more enabled if there is a living, breathing orchestra in the area.
Yeah, being I feel like an integral part to the community. And the orchestra was founded by a scientist when the community was created, and these scientists.
That makes sense.
Doesn't
it? Perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it goes back to the very first days, that relationship between the people who live there and the music that's being created. Edgar Meyer, thank you so much for talking with me today. It was a true joy and a privilege.
Well, it is my pleasure, and I really appreciate your letting people know about this. George and I are very much looking forward to coming over to Oak Ridge and getting to play through some of this music.
We look forward to hearing it.
Once again, I've been speaking with multiple Grammy Award winner, MacArthur Fellow, double bassist, composer, and Oak Ridge native Edgar Meyer. He and his son, George, perform in Oak Ridge on Monday, February 17th at 7:30 p.m. at First United Methodist Church, Oak Ridge. This concert is a special fundraiser for the Oak Ridge Civic Music Association. The father and son duo will perform original works as well as a few traditional fiddle tunes. Tickets and information available online at orcma.org.